Our guest speaker today is Dr. Charles Spence, who currently serves as chairman of the UU Service Committee and as president of the UU Church in Rancho Mirage. In the past, he has helped found the Unitarian Fellowship in Iowa and served as president of churches in Pennsylvania and Florida. In his career, he has a college chancellor and CEO. Dr. Spence will be speaking today on how the UU Service Committee's contributions to human rights is at a tipping point. We're honored to have the chairman of the UUSC speak for us today, Dr. Charles Spence.
Good morning, everybody. We are delighted to be here. When I say we, I'd like you to meet my husband, Bert Peachy, who's sitting in the front row. And Bert was the director of music at our church, and I know it's very nice for him to come to a church and not have to worry about the notes for anything about it. Just enjoy it. Bert and I were married after being together a long time in a Unitarian church in Canada because that was the only place where we could get married. And there are two things about that service that I remember a great deal. One was our grandson, who was then five at the time, and whom I had said he could talk during the ceremony if he wanted to, because everybody was going to talk. And so I stood up to give my vows to Bert, and I couldn't do it. And I looked out at the crowd like this, and there were people who loved us and good friends and family, and they realized that I was really stuck. Emotionally stuck, because I do television shows and give thousands of speeches, and so speaking wasn't hard. It was the meaning behind the marriage that was hard for me. And so I always tell people when they get up and they can't speak, just breathe, relax, take a deep breath, you'll be okay. I did that, nothing happened. And then I looked over at my five-year-old grandson, whom I had given permission to speak during the ceremony, and he does this. Come on, Grandpa. Come on, Grandpa. Get it going. And so I was able to then get it going. But then the other very striking part of the memory of that service was this wonderful Unitarian minister in Canada during the ceremony said to me, "And do you promise to let Bert be Bert?" I remember the look in her eyes when she looked at me and asked that question. And I should have said, "You mean every day? All the time? Are there exceptions? Can I control this?" But I said yes. And so you live with those consequences. And so I let Bert be Bert, and he is generous to be here today and to support the work that I do in UUSC. And like next week, it'll mean I'm gone all week dealing with large donors, and I'll tell you about that in just a minute, and running a board meeting. And so he really does a great deal of sacrifice on our behalf to financially and time-wise support UUSC. I want to talk to you today, though, about tipping points. And Unitarians, as Bill said, have long been leaders in creating and supporting critical tipping points in the history of human rights in this country and in the world. You notice I didn't say that Unitarians are tipsy. But that could be true. That could be true. I bet some of your events that you have here, wine auctions and dinners, probably some of you get tipsy. I'm not talking about that kind of tipsy. That's an entirely different truth. I'm talking instead about the Malcolm Gladwell kind of tipping point. I don't know how many of you have read the book that he wrote called The Tipping Point. Okay, a few of you have read it. He wrote Blink. He wrote a book called What the Dog Saw. He's a brilliant and a very weird person. And the fact that he's so weird makes him even more interesting to watch. But his ideas are brilliant. His basic premise is that change usually starts with the actions of key people who have the courage to see the world differently and then to take action on that new view. They are our visionaries. They're often ridiculed. They're ignored. They're bullied. But they are the beginners, and they are optimists, and they accept change. I don't know how many of you in this room are old enough to remember Jane Fonda. Some of you are. Can you remember back to the 60s and the Vietnam War and how we ridiculed Jane Fonda and called her Hanoi Jane and all kinds of terrible names? Well, I had the opportunity during that period to introduce Jane Fonda to a very large room of steelworkers, blue-collar steelworkers. And there were several things I remember about that night. One was, Jane Fonda has incredible eyes. I mean, you can't see. You've seen her in the movies, you've seen her on television, they don't show her eyes. Jane Fonda has beautiful eyes, incredibly beautiful eyes. But Jane Fonda was an early resistor to the Vietnam War. And she talked to that group of probably 500-600 steelworkers about her resistance and why she was opposed to the war and why we as a country needed to come together to go against that war. It was a very resistant audience. But by the end of an hour, Jane Fonda had those people almost all agreeing with her. And then ultimately the country agreed with her. And now as we look back some 40 years, 50 years later, we pretty much all agree that the Vietnam War was not something that we should have been involved in and that we did it badly. Jane Fonda was part of the tipping point. She caused the beginning of the tip. Tippers are those people who share their ideas and then join other people who will listen to them. They find supporters. They're willing to be patient, and they are always swimming against the stream, slowly. And Unitarians, as I said at the beginning, have played this role on many issues. They've played it on civil rights. They were murdered for civil rights. They played it on gay marriage. We had gay marriage in Massachusetts because two lesbians filed suit, and they were Unitarians in Massachusetts. We now have the rights to water, which I'm going to come back to later in California. We have abortion rights, animal rights, just to name a few areas where Unitarians have really led the way in terms of being a cause of tipping points. They marched early. They've lost their lives. And they have been rejected by many in the mainstream. But Unitarians are stubborn, and they persist in being tipping points. It's basic to what we believe. And while many other religions, and I don't want to name them, and Bert doesn't like it, when I talk this way, we disagree about it. Many other religions have cruel gods who punish, who cause suffering, who reward those who submit. Unitarians don't have a God like that. We have very powerful covenants. They're in your program. The inherent worth and dignity of every person. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and the right of conscience, and the use of the democratic process in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. These are powerful statements. These guide our behavior. And these are the ones that relate to our tipping points in human rights that we deal with at UUSC today. And those actions at UUSC are usually what give us a lot of pride in our religious heritage. They show our compassion, the love for the earth and each other. But they also make us different, as Bill was talking, and frighten many people who think differently. I admire people who have conviction like that and which makes them take personal risk and who are willing to stand up and be counted and who are proud to be in the minority. And when I wrote that statement, I thought about those times in my life when I have not stood up, when I have seen something wrong and not stood up, or I didn't have the courage to do it for whatever reason. And those are moments of great personal shame for me. I can remember every one of them. I regret them. I can't go back and undo them. But when you see something wrong and you don't do something about it, that's not being a Unitarian, and that is a source, for me at least, of very personal shame. I was drawn to participate in UUSC because of those principles. And I want to take just a few minutes to tell you about what UUSC is before I start to describe their human rights activities today. UUSC is not the UUA. And for those of you who don't know what all that alphabet garbage is, it means the Unitarians don't own UUSC. They don't run UUSC. It is a separate organization. It's not funded by the UUA. The fact that you're a Unitarian does not automatically make you a member or a supporter of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. It doesn't. It's separate. We get no money whatsoever. We have a separate board, and it's a board on which I have served for 6 years and told them about a year ago that it was really time that I go off and I should resign, and they said, no, it's your time to become chairman of the board. And they said, do it for 1 year. Well, two. And so Bert's sacrifice continues on a little longer than we had agreed, but it's done with great love. And Bill Schultz, who is now the CEO, was the president also of the UUA. He was also president of Amnesty International. And we are very fortunate to have his courageous and focused leadership now, because his goal, Bill's goal, with the board, is to make UUSC the most accountable human rights organization in the world. It's a pretty good goal. And they invited Bert and me, how many years ago now, Bert? 5, 6 years ago, to work with the board to define exactly how they were going to measure that. They weren't just going to say it. They were going to measure it and be accountable. And so that's what we're now doing. We are on our way to becoming the most accountable human rights organization in the world. The mission is this: UUSC advances human rights and social justice around the world, partnering, and I'm going to come back to that, with those who can confront unjust power structures and mobilizing to challenge oppressive policy. That mission statement is all about tipping points. We envision a world free from oppression and injustice and where all can realize their full human rights. And that's a vision that most Unitarians can believe in and help to cause make it happen. We now work with 54 partner organizations in 22 countries, and we evaluate constantly how we can maximize your investment in UUSC to manage that kind of change. I'd now like to give you some very specific examples of how we do this. And for some of you who know a lot about UUSC, I'm embarrassed that I'm maybe taking your time. But for those of you who don't, I really want to share this strategy. UUSC is not the Red Cross. We approach things entirely different. We rush in to help those who are traumatized by disaster. And remember in Burma, the tsunami in Burma, and that rotten dictator running that country wasn't going to let anybody in? Remember that? The Unitarians snuck in. We were already there. We were on the ground immediately after it happened and getting aid in there despite all the political blockage that happened, because we had partners in Burma and they trusted us. And so we were able to go around the blockades and get help there immediately. We try and find in those traumatic events those people who are marginalized and who are least likely by their own circumstances to find help to rebuild their lives. And we don't just do it for 10 minutes or 10 days. We try and change their lives forever. And I want to give you an example in Haiti. When the earthquake struck Haiti, there were lots of young women who were sexual household slaves thrown out onto the street. These were kids whose lives had really been traumatized and hurt by sex abuse in Haiti, and they had nowhere to go. We built an orphanage for those girls because they were not adoptable by many of the kinds of ways in which kids typically get adopted. So we built an orphanage, and we made a commitment to them that we would support them for 6 to 8 years, because that's how long it would take to get them skills and get them to adulthood and get them on their own. Those kids would still be wandering the streets of Port-au-Prince. They would still be neglected and abused if UUSC had not stepped in. And while everybody else was trying to rebuild Port-au-Prince, I mean, which was a mess in terms of the devastation of the earthquake, we moved people 80 miles outside the city. And we took truck tires, which are, you know, a nuisance in the environment. And we figured out ways in which we could build eco and communities and use those truck tires to build gardens and create food for people. And now that model of taking all the trash that's there and reusing it in another way is what we're doing in rebuilding communities outside of Port-au-Prince. It's a model that's being replicated over and over again. Let's talk about the Middle East. I mean, we have seen, you talk about tipping points. One country to another, all of a sudden, you know, run by dictators for 30, 40, 50 years, and all of a sudden, there's mayhem in the streets, and people coming together to say this is not right, and people who looked to be absolutely in power forever were starting to be turned out. One revolution begat another revolution. And UUSC was there. And we were there in the strangest ways. We took a comic book that was written about nonviolence and Martin Luther King and had that comic book translated into Muslim and distributed throughout the Middle East. And so we were getting tweets from Cairo that the UUSC comic book was being handed out to young people all throughout those riots. They were learning from our examples that you can cause change, you can create civil rights, and you can do it without violence. You can do it, but you do it with resistance. And UUSC was helping to teach that method of resistance, which was not known in that part of the country. We're also working internationally and nationally to deal with water, which was mentioned earlier in the service today. And about 3 weeks ago, I was in a community with the UUSC folks up in the Central Valley in a little town called Seville, which nobody in this room has probably ever been to. But there are 70 families there and a school. And, you know, when you have bad water, they tell you to boil it. You know, that's the usual advice of our water people. Boil the water and you'll get the bacteria. Well, the unfortunate thing is that when the water has a lot of arsenic in it and you boil it, you triple the arsenic. Their water had nitrates and arsenic in it. And when you took a glass and put it under a tap to get drinking water, I saw this. What comes out are polywogs. Polywogs. How do the polywogs get there? Well, I'll tell you how they get there. And it takes an hour to fill your washing machine. And you can't take a shower. And the schools can't have drinking fountains. Because the water is so polluted and so dangerous. And these are people in California today. And the reason that the water has polywogs is that the water system is a pipe going into a stream. I went and looked at it. There it is. It just sucks the water out. It's not treated. It's not filtered. It comes right out. These people have tried everything to get water systems, to get their county, to get their governmental structures to deal with this water. These are nice homes. These are nice people. They're probably all Hispanic. I would guess they're all Hispanic. And so in some people's minds, they may not count. We don't have to provide good water. But as a result of the Unitarians in California, we passed 3 water bills last year, which gives poor people the right to water. And it was largely the effort of Unitarians who caused that right to water passage. The Unitarians sued the government of South Africa. We took them to court because they decided that they were going to install water monitoring devices But you know what? They only did it for poor people. Isn't that interesting? Middle class people, lower class people, only the poorest got a meter. And that meter gave them a liter of water a day. 1 liter. Do you know how big of a liter is? About this big. Not very big. It's not enough to live on. And so by working through the governmental structures, UUSC was able to tackle that issue and get that turned over. We did the same thing in Ecuador. We are working around the world to try and get water rights for the poor as a basic human right. That's kind of an off-the-road issue. It's not a mainstream issue. But water is basic to human life. There are literally hundreds of UUSC stories, and I'm amazed by them and inspired by what I see, what happens to the human spirit when it's nourished. And nourished in unusual ways. We took a woman who Time magazine named one of the 100 brightest people in the country, very bright but very self-effacing woman, who runs the design lab at MIT, big, important, rich university, and we said, would you go to Africa with us and help set up a design lab? And so she went to Africa, and I haven't been there to see it, but I've seen movies of, so here are all these people sitting under palm trees, and she's teaching them about the concepts of design. And I'm wondering, are we doing the right thing here? Well, people learned the concepts of design, and they were able to take those little cans, you know, that you get orange juice in, the little tiny cans. I don't know how many out there, like 3 or 4 ounces. And if you cut the bottom of them off, you can use those to shuck corn much faster. They figured out how to do that. It gave the women in the community days of extra time because they didn't have to shuck the corn by hand. They learned about how to use bicycle parts to get water to move from one canal to another to create paddles. And they were able to take the kind of design concept that we take for granted and make their lives better. One of the really exciting things that we're doing and that you will hear about now, because we're just announcing it, is the UUSC went to the UUA and said, let's cooperate on something. We need to create a system for creating social activists and people interested in social justice forever. How do we do that? And so we created something called the College of Social Justice. And that college will teach young people how to be activists. It'll take people who are like many of us in this room and who need to understand activism, and we'll go wherever and build houses or work with people. But it's going to be run as a college, and we have just hired a very experienced 20-some-year Unitarian minister from New Haven, Connecticut, to be the first head of our college. And this past week, I had the pleasure of calling people, a number of people on the phone. And can you imagine, what do you say to somebody who just gave you $1 million? Thank you. You said thank you. Big thanks. And so I got to be the one to call the people who gave $1,500,000, $200,000, $100,000. And I'm going to be meeting with them next week in Boston. But they so believe that Unitarians need to continue their role in social justice and do it better. And my little church in Rancho Mirage, maybe we're not as sophisticated as you, but we kind of struggle. How do we do that? How are we going to be an organization that focuses our needs on social justice? And how do we come together as a congregation to do that? Well, UUSC and the UUA have come together now to give a great deal of attention to that, and it'll be funded forever, and we will be doing it. I hope that you are members of UUSC. You have to be a member separately. Costs about $40 a year. We have 46,000 members. But you have to join. You have to do it online. Giving money to the UUA doesn't give us a dime. And so I've been giving a number of these presentations, and somebody usually comes up to me after the service and slips me a check. Where are you? so that we'll save some. Where are you in the audience? We'll save some time. I'll come right to you after the service. They give me a check made out to UUSC, and I send it on to them so that you can become a member. You know your chalice? Do you know the history of your chalice? Hans Deutsch? You know who Hans Deutsch is? I'll give you a little Unitarian history. He's the guy who created this after he fled Nazi persecution and got aided by the Unitarians to escape. And as a thank you gift to us, he created this symbol, our chalice. And his name was Hans Deutsch. And he's figured out ways to support us a long time symbolically. I hope that this presentation inspires you to figure out how you can support UUSC, how this church can choose one of the many projects that you become aware of and you can support, whether it's buying coffee or whether it's taking people to look at what we're doing in Africa. I encourage you to do it. But most of all, I want you to take pride in what you, as Unitarians, have done to tip the world, to come together, to fight the resistance, and to make this a better world. Thank you for inviting me. There is a website, if you have access to a computer, UUSC.org. If you go on that website, you can look at volunteer activities, and they will go all the way from, which we did last year in California, appealing to legislators to pass the Right to Water bill, to activities nationally and internationally. We sponsor activities called Just Journeys, where we'll take people to meet with local people wherever they are, Ecuador. I'll give you a very interesting one that I went on. We went to Guatemala. The Guatemalan government in 1983 said to an electric company, clear a valley to build a hydroelectric plant. The military killed 83,000 Mayan Indians. They murdered them, buried them out there in the valley. Nobody knew about it. Unitarians paid for forensic lab proof that that happened, and so we took a journey there to force the government to apologize, to give the Mayans back their land, and to pay them. And that was the result of a group of Unitarians going, and Bert didn't like it because I would say, I'm here, but I'm protected by people with machine guns. So don't worry. But there are those kinds of activities worldwide. I hope that helps. Go to UUSC.org. The criteria for accountability are proving that we do what we say we do. That's the essence of it. And so we have come up with measurable objectives. How many people are we impacting? How much money are we saving for governments? How many lives are we saving? I mean, we can tell you those exactly. And the board is doing it with really pretty tight finances. We don't have a lot of money. Our budget's about $5 million, which is not a lot of money. And so we extend that money by working with partners, partner organizations. We find groups that are already in the field doing good work, and we say, well, what if we give you $10,000 more? Can you help us do, you know, these two things? And so we're constantly donating money to other people to help, and we measure what kind of help we get. Another question. Yes, sir.
What is your source of information for identifying opportunities that you'd like to, that you can make a difference in? And what is the decision process used by the USC to decide where to put your resources?
That is a great question. You want to join the board? That's the kind of question the board's asking. And we do have a process, and I can't tell you all the steps that they go through, but a group of people in our organization review all the opportunities, have long conversations with the people. We now have been in the world for so long with so many partners, one kind of leads us to another. But there is a very specific process, and the board wants to see that and understand the question that you've asked exactly. I can't tell you all the details of it because it's too far down in the organization, but it's a thorough process. Yes, ma'am. Right. We are asking that question about water technology, solar technology, wind technology. One of our challenges to ourselves right now is how can we use the natural strength of the environment and combine it with new technology to do that. I'm not aware that we have a specific program, though, on solar cookers, but we may have it, but I don't know it. But the board has raised the larger question about how do you marshal the forces of the environment and use technology cheaply? Yes, ma'am. It's going to happen all over the country. And
online, for instance?
Some of it will be online, but there are going to be actual meetings for young Unitarian activists who want to come together. And we've actually started those. We piloted them. And I met with some of those young people about a month ago. They had come together here in California, recommended by various churches, and sponsored by various churches at high school age and college age. And the neat thing was, these kids were full of themselves. They were absolutely full of themselves. They had so much enthusiasm and vigor and, we can tackle the world. I loved it. And it was borderline obnoxious. I mean, it was just under obnoxious, which is where you want to be. This man had a question here. There was a question down in here and I missed it. Yes. How do they become tippers? They become part of a larger group. They look for people giving different answers and look how they can support. I'm part of a corporation now, and I've just written a proposal to that corporation that we take on a very significant project of social justice. It's part of our corporate responsibility, and the response has been very positive. So corporations can have positive, ethical, forceful, good works. And I hope my corporation is able to do that. So I don't see corporations as evil, but I sure have some of the same concerns that you do about the way money is taking over politics. There's a question in the back there. Yes. Yes, in fact, we officially endorsed the movement. And I worried, as a board member, what kind of backlash we were going to get from that. None. People were very positive. And I visited, I don't know how many, maybe 6 or 7 Occupy sites around the country, and went in and looked to see what was happening. And the interesting thing is when you read American history, the same kind of thing was happening here back in the 30s and the 20s. I mean, that's a revisiting of a concept of people coming up together and fighting. I'm not sure what their impact is going to be, but UUSC endorsed them.